And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear those co-hosts shouting.
Welcome in to the dramatic conclusion of your Hear That Podcast Growlin' Draft coverage presented by Visa, a network working for everyone, and we are working for you late into Saturday. It's not 1 a.m. though, Jay.
No.
And we are one podcast and a few more paragraphs away from the best damn beer of the year. It's almost here with the draft finally complete. Can almost taste it.
I thought you were going to say we were one podcast away from our 2023 mock draft.
Oh, you're going to try to put me into a bad place before what's going to be a fun podcast. I'm excited about this. We're going to wrap up this draft. We're going to have some major takeaways, but we spent the last 72 hours basically living down here at Paul Brown Stadium, talking to coaches, talking to players, hanging out around, challenging James Rapine to run 100 yards in under 16 and a half seconds on the field, which has not been done yet. I want to make this happen. But we're down here for a long time, killing time. And a lot of fun stuff happens. So I've got six clips of conversations with different people that were either interesting, fun, unique, funny, Frank Pollock talking about what it means to have shit on your neck.
In your neck.
We're not really sure where the shit comes from or why it's there, but we'll give Frank Pollock a chance to answer that for you. We're going to bring you some of those clips and talk a little bit about some of the takeaways from some of them, some funny, some real serious. But first, before we get to all of that, let's talk about this Bengals draft. It wrapped up on Saturday with only three picks coming off the board, which because it included a trade up. And so they ended up in the fourth round going with Cordell Volson, a guard out of North Dakota State that kind of followed in line with Zachary Carter that Dane Brugler had as a sixth-round projection. People, you know, maybe it was a reach. We'll talk about him. In the fifth round, they took Tyson Anderson, a safety from Toledo, which was the opposite. It would have made much more sense on the big boards that you follow maybe if those picks were swapped. But either way, they take a safety there in round five. And then they go defense again with their final pick in round seven because they traded up for Anderson and ditched one of their seventh round picks for that, which was 2-9 overall. They close it out right towards the end of the draft, taking edge Jeffrey Gunter from Coastal Carolina. So you end up with a six pick class, the smallest Bengals class since 2002, and one that only included one offensive player and nobody that touches the ball. You end up with, you know, all of this defense. We thought it would be defense, Jay. You know, we said defense seemed likely in the beginning, and it felt like today would be the day for the offense to come back. Well, they did it first, and then Brian Callahan and the offensive staff disappeared again because this was all about Lou Anarumo and building the depth of that defensive side of the ball, right?
Yeah, I mean, if they don't make those two trade-ups, which is another rare move. They've, since the Kajana Carter trade up in 1995, they'd only traded up four times. They do it twice in this draft. If they don't do that, it's an eight-person class, and I think it looks like five defense, three offense. It looks a little more balanced, but they gave up the two picks. They came in to this draft with a clear mission to target defense early. I think it just kind of played out that way. I don't think that was the intent, is it was going to be all defense except for an offensive lineman. It's just the way it fell to them. They could have gone either way in that seventh round. But it's notable. I mean, one offensive player. I was kind of surprised when that was brought up to Zach in the post-draft press conference that the only offensive guy they drafted, or the only guy they didn't draft anybody that touches the ball. And I would counter that Dax Hill and Cameron Taylor Britt are probably going to touch the ball at some point. You would hope so. You would hope they're knocking down passes. But yes, as far as skill position players, none. That has never happened in a Bengals draft. One offensive player never happened in a Bengals draft. Again, six-person class, very small. But this was a Bengals draft defined by defense and aggression. Seeing who they wanting, going up and getting them, and even in the case of Carter and Volson, not necessarily going up to get them, but guys they wanted, and they didn't care where they were ranked on the board. They liked them. They got them. There's some question marks about both those picks, but we'll see how that plays out.
Let's go through a few of, some standard draft tropes. And that would be – main takeaway, I think we kind of hit this, but I have one in addition to what you're talking about. Again, the character, yes, the culture, the intangible stuff carries the day. Like, you just saw so many times where this is not about them not drafting athletes. In fact, you know, they have a ton of guys with great relative athletic scores. They have three DBs with 40 times under 4.4. They, I think the Next Gen Stats had them as the fifth most athletic class overall by average. And so it wasn't a matter of not taking athletes. It was just the common thread of so many of these picks was football IQ, intelligence, versatility on the field and off of it, captains, leaders, guys that have a presence to them and charisma that have this culture. I mean, that, and then getting into the attitude thing, which we'll touch on when we talk about Frank Pollock and their pick. I mean, there's just a type of player. They saw it work. They believe in it. They saw it work last year, and they're going to continue to invest in it. And I'm not saying that stuff, you know, broke ties, but I think it vaulted people by grade substantially. And you could see that reflected in the fact that the guys they coveted had that as a primary selling point. You're just seeing that over and over and over for years now. I always, you know, there's a few lines that I love to use, and it's like in the world of politics. It's don't tell me about your platform, show me your budget. You can talk about character all you want. You can talk about that stuff all you want. The great part of the draft is you are exposed for who you really are, who you trust, what traits you cherish, what really matters to you. You are exposed to that when it comes to draft. And they kind of proved it here that they are doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on that stuff being what they believe makes them go organizationally.
And I think that's an important note, because that was the discussion. Okay, now you've built that culture. It's in place. You went to the Super Bowl. Now maybe you can take some flyers on some guys. Now maybe you can take – they said no. It's just like stacking talent, stacking character. You have to – you know that churn is always going to happen. You're Von Bell, Jesse Bates, both those guys are in contract years. Two of your best leaders on defense maybe won't be here next year, probably won't be here next year. You need to keep filling the talent bucket over and over again, and you need to keep bringing in these quality guys. As great as your culture is, if you bring in a couple guys that don't have that, it can turn in a hurry. So I thought that was important, where they were afforded the opportunity maybe to kind of step outside, and they didn't do it. They stayed committed to what they believe in. And there's a lot of talk about this team maybe catching lightning in a bottle last year, one hit wonder and all that. And that this is kind of their way of saying, no, what we built, we're going to continue to build, and we're here for the long time, for the long haul.
Yeah. Favorite pick. I I got to say, we had to answer this, and I had a different answer than I'm going to say here, because I have the answer that I wanted to say and the answer that I gave. My favorite pick is Tyson Anderson. I love that pick in the fifth round. 10 years ago in the fifth round, they took George Iloka, and that turned into a starting safety for them for a long time. And, you know, you hear from Tyson Anderson, you hear about Tyson Anderson, and Dane loved him, had him as, I think, the 9th overall safety to get that in the fifth round. Had him above Alante Taylor, who's a guy who went way earlier. And special teams, he has ace potential.
Oh, yeah.
Maven expectation, stalwart floor. That's what I'm saying. When it comes to potential, he 900 plus special team snaps, a guy who's got 4.36 speed. He can play safety. He's got the versatility. He's played all over the place, down in nickel, corner, whatever. You know, he brings you speed. He's a 3-time captain, as he'll tell you. We'll bring him later. And so he's got all the leadership, all the charisma, all the speed, all the intangible stuff that you want. He, you know, to have that in the fifth round, he may not play a lick. I mean, he may not be very good. I don't know that, but, you know, to kind of pinpoint, it just seems like the boxes they were so focused on checking all week. And then also to come up in the fifth round to get him, to pinpoint it. I like the aggression there. You know, you talked about them going from 8 picks to 6 and them trading up and how that changed the class. There's a recognition in that. There's a recognition that this roster does not need a lot of players. It needs a few of the right players. And that means we – 8 guys aren't going to make this team from this class. There's just not enough spots. The roster's too loaded at this point. They have too many guys that they love that are already here that aren't going anywhere that helps them get to the Super Bowl. So you can sacrifice some of those when you see the absolute right guy that you want to make sure that you get. That goes for Cam Taylor-Britt, who they made sure they went up for, and Tyson Anderson, who they went up for. And I really like that Anderson pick for value and exactly the type of person that you want to see enter the building for that late in a draft.
Yeah, I do too, because I talked to his defensive coordinator at Toledo, and I thought it was really interesting. He is a 5-year star on a small team that hasn't sent a defensive player to the NFL since 1998, and it's pretty clear he's going to end up. They asked him to switch positions last year. Yeah, sure, whatever you want. He goes from a safety to a nickel corner. Still playing all those special team snaps as the star of the team. That's what we're talking about with the character, with the makeup of these guys, with the guys that just love ball. That, yeah, I'll play special teams. Another chance to be on the field. And he's not out there as a gunner running down, making the splash plays and the tackles. He's inside. He's doing the grunt work on special teams. You have to love that. I do. I love that pick. For me, my favorite is still Dax Hill. I just think it's going to be so fun to watch what they do with him. It's so unpredictable. I mean, how many times does a team draft a guy in the first round and say, I don't know what we're going to do with him? I mean, it's wide open. They don't have a plan for him, and that's the exciting part of it. They're going to figure it out as they go. He's going to be on the field a lot. There could be an injury. He could work into a starting role. Who knows what's going to happen, how often he's going to play. He is going to play, and he was number 20 on the big board. They get him at 31. Just value, character, potential, the fun factor again with where they can put him everywhere. That's my favorite pick. And maybe it's a little biased because he's the only one that actually came into town and we got to meet in person. But I don't think that's influencing me that much. I really do like that pick.
I like it for the embracing of modern football. Yeah. And the fact that, you know, we talked about it last year, the Bengals were against the grain. I mean, we were sitting here in the run-up to the Chase Sewell thing. You know, I'm on talking with Robert Mays on our NFL Athletic show, and it's really deep philosophical discussions about the future direction of the NFL and how their pick was kind of a microcosm of how maybe that's changing. A year later, that decision about the future direction of football put the Bengals in the Super Bowl. And what did you see? The reaction? I thought that stood out in this draft and this offseason. Mm-hmm. Receivers. God, I have all these receivers, big money receivers. Draft them, overdraft them, run on receivers. All of that stuff is just a direct reaction to modern day football. And the Bengals react to that with their next reaction to that. Keep teams off balance. Give me more playmakers and speed people that I can put in the secondary that can do different things. So quarterbacks that are so smart, so able to dissect coverages and know what you're doing and know tendencies can't do that with you because you have three safeties and one of them's Dax Hill, who he could be any position out there for you. Right. Or, you know, you've got Britt who's played safety and he plays zone off or press man and can do it all. And you've got Jesse who does both. Von Bell does. I mean, you've got so much of that. They focused on making sure they got a hybrid defensive lineman who can play, you know, five eye, three technique, whatever. Like they so focus on that, and that's their reaction. It's focusing on what is the next level for modern day football, and that is keeping having smart players that can execute that, and then having the ability to constantly keep these intelligent passing games off balance by not knowing exactly what they're looking at all the time. Players like Hill, players like Britt, getting versatile guys on the inside are all a really big part of that. And I love that. I mean, we're sitting here talking about the Bengals setting the pace for modern day football, but really they, I'm not saying that they're trailblazers here, but they're certainly doing stuff. I think that feels like has very much a view to the direction the game is going and less looking back at where it maybe recently was.
Yeah. I mean, they're not the only one, but they are on the front edge. I mean, elite talent, cutting edge philosophy, Cincinnati Bengals. Did you ever think you would hear that in your lifetime?
Yeah, I did not. I also didn't think I'd see him in the Super Bowl, so here we are.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Let's go least favorite pick. Do you have one off the top of the head?
Yeah, it's Carter. Yeah. I think they could have got either a different player there, a true three technique. Yeah, they love versatility, but you really do need a guy that you are positive can be that three technique, and maybe he can be. Most of his snaps were spent on the outside. Most of his production sack-wise, according to Lou Anarumo, I didn't go watch all of his snaps, but he said most of his sacks came inside. So we'll see how that works out. But I feel like they could have either got someone else there or they could have waited and got Carter in the fourth round, maybe even the fifth. It felt like a reach. I think you could say that about Volson too, but that was that felt like a given. They were going to take an interior offensive lineman in the fourth round, and maybe he's not the one that we pegged or the one that Dane Brugler pegged or any big board pegged, but they liked him, so I'm going to trust them on that. But the Carter one just – I don't know. I just, that one feels like a reach to me. Maybe it works out, but that's, I'm not saying it's a terrible pick, but it's my least favorite of the six.
Listen to Jay here giving the benefit of the doubt on offensive line drafting and not giving them the benefit of the doubt on defensive line drafting when all history suggests it should be the opposite. I understand where they're coming from with Volson. They view it, it's really going to be fascinating competition between Carmen and Volson, because you're going to have Carmen, traitsy, non-motivated guy, right? Mm. Versus not so athletically gifted, but absolutely everything, every snap, hard grinding dude. And it's kind of like those two worlds. And I think you ask them. I just feel like it's not coincidence that a year after they had to deal with that, that they went the other direction. It felt like, sure, they could have found guys that had a little bit more athleticism. They could have found guys that had a little bit more of the stuff that Carmen has, the size, speed, whatever. They wanted the guy that is going to work harder than everybody else and do it the right way. And let me tell you where I know this dude's locker is probably going to end up. Right next to Alex Kappa. Mm-hmm. Small school dude from Humboldt State, made his own name. I mean, granted, he was a third round pick or whatever, but still, you know, guy who was small school, grinding, glass eating, about the right stuff, being the difference in him becoming a real player in this league. Hey, Cordell Volson, go learn everything from Alex Kappa, because he did everything that you can do if you do it the right way. You guys are cut from the same cloth, man. And if you could have Kappa at one guard and Kappa Jr. at the other guard, I think that's how you envision. They both got red hair too. I mean, come on. How could it not work out that way? But I can buy that vision a little bit more. So I'm not going to call it my least favorite, but it does feel reachy. Mm-hmm. To me, and for that fact, I would probably say Carter too. It feels like they pigeonholed themselves to, we want this. And rather than opening it up to a little bit, like, yeah, but isn't Perrion Winfrey going to be a better player, even if he's more of a pure three technique than, and we'll see. It'll be fun to track those two careers as they go by, as Winfrey went right off the board. And you could maybe say the same thing about Dax Hill, who Logan Hall goes right off the board two picks later and was also in the conversation. They felt like it was probably a little rich for Hall there. But, you know, that stands out to me, that maybe they felt they got a little too obsessed with finding that hybrid player and less with just find a defensive lineman that can come in there and play for you. Biggest surprise of the weekend?
I guess that they didn't take a wide receiver or wide receiver slash punt returner. It felt like that was going to be the main target on offense, maybe even ahead of a offensive lineman. Again, it comes down to losing those picks. I wonder what they can do in undrafted free agency, because that's where they're going to have to find these guys. And every undrafted free agent that's come in here ever that we've talked to, why'd you pick the Bengals? What do they always say? Opportunity. You've got three elite starters here. How many wide receivers? Now, yeah, you need six or seven, and the depth is going to be there, and maybe that's enticing to play under those guys and learn from them. But I don't know. It just feels like it's going to be a tougher sell to go get wide receivers to come here. Maybe not. Maybe they say, yeah, I'll catch passes from Joe Burrow, even if it's in practice. You know, eventually I'm going to get my shot. But I was surprised that there was not a receiver slash punt returner as part of this class.
Yeah, I was too, and I would throw tight end there. Yeah. I mean, I thought that we would see, and I think they had their eyes on all of that. I mean, I think there were guys that they liked that went off right in front of them. I think the reachiness of those middle rounds was in a lot of ways because I think a lot of the guys they had their eyes on got plucked off right in front of them. And they just kind of went, but look, this is the next on our board. Maybe we didn't think, maybe we thought we could get him later, but he really is next on our board because guys just kept getting plucked off right in front of him. And a lot of that was some of the receivers and tight ends, I think that they liked a lot.
Yeah.
It ended up going off in front of them. And that's part of drafting 31st is you end up with frustrating rounds and not maybe checking the boxes you want. I'll be interested to see if the reevaluation of everything coming out of this is, let's revisit some free agents that are out there, veterans, not undrafted college free agents, and see maybe that's where you find a receiver who's out there, or maybe there's a tight end that's sitting out there that you can come, that could come in for 1 year and be number four or five, for you. We'll see if that's a direction that they go, but I do think that's out there. Let's kind of move on from that and bring you some of the interviews and some of the moments from this week. We're going to start off. We got six of them here. I'm going to start off. This was from our press conference with Zach Taylor and Lou Anarumo on Friday. They had a couple really interesting things to say as we talk about Cam Taylor-Britt and the comparison to Stanley Morgan, who's here now. And as Joe Burrow said, everyone's favorite teammate. He said that during the year because of the way he practices. The ultimate ball-loving, hard-working, undrafted, you know, process-embracing guy. I thought there's some interesting things there, as well as Lou Anarumo talking about what he is looking for in these corners, and it's relevant as they end up taking three DBs in this draft.
Connections there, background and culture in Nebraska?
We talked to quite a few people, you know, and you know, he's oftentimes been compared to Stanley in terms of how he is on the practice field, in terms of kind of the character and the makeup and the energy, and I think that paints a picture for all of us, so that's a good thing.
What makes Stanley such a good practice player?
Like Lou just said, same guy every day. You know what you're going to get when Stanley walks on the field every day. He's going to bring energy and competitiveness. And however many days he's been here, he has done those two things every single day. And so when you hear that comparison of this is what he's going to be like at practice, that's a great thing. You know, that's what we love. We love guys that bring energy and it's a long season, you know, and that's a hard thing to do. And so the more guys that can bring that, the better the team becomes, the more fun practice is for you guys to sit there and watch that first however many minutes and for us to be a part of all year. So that's a really positive thing.
Lou, with your experience as a DB's coach in your system specifically, what is the one trait you would say to play outside is the most important in your system?
Yeah, I think I would say there's a couple, but at the top of it, you know, they have to be able to run, obviously. But I'm also a big fan of guys with, you know, long arms and able to get in and out of plays. Those two things play into it. And then, you know, ball skills and on from there. But they got to be able to run. And you know, the length also helps them be good tacklers when they have that. So that's why I'm so adamant about that when it kind of comes up.
You got your top five defensive backs back, but you've used your top two picks on defensive backs. What does that say about the need for depth at that part of the team and the state of the game right now?
How critical it is, you know, as a 17-game season goes on and you go into the playoffs – that depth is critical. You know, how many teams do we see that, you know, come in December in these critical games and they're down, you know, a couple DBs and they're pulling guys off the practice squad. And so I think it's great competitiveness, like Lou mentioned, just for all of our guys. But you're going to need that depth over the course of the long seasons that we're going to have to endure.
You know, kind of just to follow up on that question and Zach's answer is, you know, we play so many different things where there's going to be six and sometimes seven DBs out on the field at one time. No other position on the field, offense or defense, is going to do that. So it's just so critical to have, depth there for sure in today's NFL.
Yeah, we knew that Lou Anarumo liked guys with long arms, but I thought it was interesting. I am adamant about that. You're going to hear that from me. I want guys with long arms, helps them tackle, helps them break up passes, all that stuff. And how imperative, interesting, before they took the two more DBs, how imperative depth at DB is, I thought was an interesting thing. I want to go on. I had a conversation with Robert Livingston, safeties coach, who ended up getting two new additions to his room. We talked about a bunch of stuff, but here's a cut up of a smaller piece of it. Kind of some focus on Dax Hill and moving around and maybe the ability to play outside corner down the line. So we talked about when you really look at his physical profile, you know, he's tall, he's long, he runs a 4.38, he can cover. Some interesting stuff there about, you know, no, he hasn't done it, but he also sort of has, and exactly kind of maybe that what that could look like going forward. Here's myself with Bengals safeties coach Robert Livingston.
What stood out to you on the tape from Dax? I mean, is it just – I mean, we know about the versatility, but are there plays or games that kind of really stood out to you?
I think in terms of games, the best game was probably Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You can see him do a lot of different things. You know, you can see him play corner. You can see him play nickel. You can see him play safety. And that's kind of the way the league's going, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, let's not lie to each other. I think every breaking news you hear is like, another receiver was traded. You know, like, what's going on? A tight end, Darren Waller.
Right? You better have a lot of people.
Yeah. So I think that was a great look, and just, you know, play speed, play style. Obviously, Coach McDonald was the defense coordinator there. He's in Baltimore now, so he's had that kind of NFL system. And not to say what they were doing before was bad. It was just, you know, it's different. It's a lot more complex and all that stuff. So that part was good, and obviously this is just the beginning. You know, you come in and kind of see what you got. Obviously, Zach and Lewis said their piece about what we're going to do and just see what we can do. Again, I think from a defensive perspective, the more guys that you have that can do multiple things, if you're the quarterback or the offensive coordinator looking over there, and you know, this guy, when he lines up at two, he always plays man or blitzes. Well, now we can do different things. And obviously, being a young player, you know, you got to earn your stripes and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be exciting to get him in the group, obviously, with Vaughn and Jess and Brandon and Mike Thomas and Trayvon Henderson, and kind of go from there.
Just because I don't really know this, I mean, physically, like, his numbers look like an outside corner, like 6 foot, long arms,
for sure,
190 whatever, 4.38. He's obviously not done it. I mean, is that something that's easily, like, how hard of a transfer would that be to, is that something you just say in OTAs, like, go try that? It's obviously much harder than that.
Yeah,
but I mean, like, how natural of a progression could that be from somebody to just pop out there that played nickel for the whole
time? Yeah, I think it's the hardest position on the field.
Yeah.
You know, playing outside the numbers. I mean, it is judgment day every play. So you got to have a real skill set, and we'll just see. Again, you could argue with the college hashes being as wide as they are, and let's say the ball's on the defense's left hash and the slot is 2 yards from the college numbers. Well, dude, that's just about an outside player in the NFL, you know, with the ball always in the middle of the field. So there are things you look at. And that's the beauty of the spring is, hey, today, let's do this. Hey, today, let's do that.
Yeah.
You never lose a game. You go home. You get to see your kids. You're in a good mood. So that's the beauty of the spring is, hey, let's try this. And it goes from players to, you know, we'll talk about it all the time. Like, hey, dude, let's work on this technique today.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, these are the things we're focusing on individually. You know, we'll give these guys, hey, let's work on these five things, you know, this spring.
I really found it the interesting conversation about the hash marks and about how when in college with the wide hashes, when you're on one hash and technically the slot guy is on the outside of the other hash, you're basically on the island. It's like an outside corner. It's the same type of stuff. And he's done a ton of that and obviously looked good doing. I think that piqued everybody's interest a little bit inside the Bengals. Like we said earlier, though, Dax Hill is going to be very fun to see what this plan exactly is, as you heard Robert allude to. They've got their plan. What that plan exactly is for what it's going to look like, exciting thing to see.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, let's go. Second round pick, Cam Taylor Britt. Talked about him as one of the favorites. We joked around about how, you know, people would just, you love this guy's personality, all juice, first team, all that stuff. Here's some of his interview after he got picked on the conference call with us. That laugh is what gets me every time, Jay. It's just the happiness and the giddiness and the excitement in the laugh. And so much other good stuff in here. Here's some of our conference call with Nebraska cornerback Cam Taylor Britt.
Congratulations, Cam. What was your reaction to being and getting that call from Cincinnati?
Man, honestly, man, I was just so excited I couldn't even say any words. Well, it was definitely, man. It was just a dream come true, you could say. My visit there was amazing. You know, just to even get picked up by a team, and especially the Bengals, is, you know, surreal to me right now. And even though Coach, you know, Zach, he played at the great University of Nebraska, man, it makes it even better.
What, take me through your visit here. What made it so amazing for you coming in here, and what was that connection like?
Honestly, man, the staff is great. Everybody on the staff, I could say. Even from when I got to the airport for, you know, through communication of me getting from place to place, they were on time with everything and, you know, just very, you know, professional, you could say, with everything they do. And I really got along with their DB coach, man. We had a, you know, a great time in there. We were just kicking it, not even talking about football. And, you know, we ran out of time. But, you know, that's the conversation that you want to have with coaches and have that, you know, relationship.
So did you kind of leave feeling like, man, I feel like I might end up at Cincinnati that day?
It's crazy because I did.
Cam, did you tell anybody that you thought that maybe you'd end up with the Bengals after the visit went
through? not at all, man. I didn't. I kind of kept it to myself. I told my agent, you know, he, you know, marked down some things, but other than that, no, I did it.
Cam, one thing that the coaches brought up is how you coming here can bring the or raise the competitiveness level up in the cornerback room. What kind of competitor are you?
Honestly, man, I just want to be first, and that's in everything I do. I don't care if we're playing, you know, badminton or, you know, tennis, soccer. I don't know, you know, any sport possible. I always want to be first, and I promise you that once I come in there and get in that deep room, they'll feel my presence, you know, just because I'm competitive, dog. I love it. You know, you say I can't do something, I'll show you that I can, and it's always been like that.
Do you know Daxton Hill at all?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, he played in Michigan. Well, we played him a couple of years, so I was at Nebraska.
Do you have a relationship with him by chance?
I want to say not too much, but we will most definitely. I'll tell you that.
you both ran a 4.38 40-yard dash. So
yes, sir.
You think there's a race in the future of the two top picks?
We can make that happen. I told you, I'm a competitor, man. I'm not going to say no.
So as a competitor, how much do you look forward to practicing against Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins?
That was the first thing I thought about. I can't wait. Honestly, man, like I said, like Coach said, I bring the juice at practice, and it's just like the game. And you feel me? Like, just going against those top receivers like that and just helping my game so much to where, you know, guarding other receivers won't be as hard. I can't wait to get out there and, you know, actually, you know, get to practice in one-on-ones with those guys.
Sounds like you've had a smile on your face since you got that phone call from the Bengals. Is that the case? Are you on cloud nine?
Man, it is the case. I've been smiling since I've been on the phone with you guys too, man. I promise you, ever since I saw the area code and the you know, the city and state, I was, you know, very excited, man.
Cam, did you know Stanley Morgan at all?
Oh yeah, that's my big bro, man. He actually he kind of brought me in as a DV. When he was playing receiver at Nebraska, I always tried to go against him. You know, just being, like I said, the competitor that I am, I promise you, if you ask him and do an interview, he'll tell you that I was always the first one to try to, you know, knock out Stanley Morgan just because he was a superstar on the team. But, you know, I just had to solidify myself and show them that this freshman wasn't afraid to come in and, you know, work.
Coaches kind of said that, you know, Stanley is a pretty beloved teammate here for the way he practices and stuff. Did he kind of set the pace for you there at Nebraska where you saw the way he brought it every day and it was kind of something that you followed?
Most definitely, you could say that. That was someone I actually looked up to, even though he was on the offensive side. But as a leader and just as a person that, you know, never see quit, it doesn't matter what he went through. Family-wise, you know, school-wise, football-wise, it didn't matter out that outside stuff. Once he stepped on that field, he was a problem. And that's a problem he didn't want to deal with.
Your head coach is a Nebraska Hall of Famer. Do you have any knowledge of Zach Taylor's career as a quarterback for the Cornhuskers?
I kind of do, I can say. He made sure of that.
What did he share?
Not as well. He was probably one of the best quarterbacks to come through Nebraska.
Just love Zach Taylor made sure I knew that. Coach made sure I knew that. I just love, I mean, it's too good. It's too good. And who wouldn't want to come and cut your teeth against T and Jamar and Tyler Boyd? And that can really go a long way to help improve your game and make you a better player. And, you know, acknowledging where his faults are, what he's working so hard to get better, even throughout the pre-draft process. You just love everything about, are we going to call him CTB? Are we comfortable? We're going to do that.
I'm going to tweet him that. It's way easier.
It is way easier to tweet it. I think we'll do that. All right. So Frank Pollock made famous the term glass eaters recently, and it spawned a whole thing that we have heavily leaned into without question. Well, kind of a new one came out of this today. And you know what? It was based around the pick of Cordell Volson and the type of person he is and the way that he plays out there. And well, let's just bring Frank Pollock explaining a little something about having shit in your neck.
You've talked a lot about his intangibles. Have you seen the intangible side of the draft, Stressmore, and the types of players you guys add in the Bengals compared to others?
Yeah, for me, that's like line one, if you know, line two, at worst, line three in my room. I mean, you got to have guys that have intangibles, the work ethic. You know, what are they made of? What's their mental toughness, their grit? Can they learn? Can they process fast, you know, with the way that we run our scheme on offense? The defense is going to move and shift. We're going to invite them to do that with our motions that we utilize. So you got to be able to think like this, react, adjust, and then go play fast. And then, so all that is, it goes into the makeup. You know, we're not just showing them a card and go block that guy. There's a lot of guys who excel at that, but once it goes live, the picture starts changing on them, you know, their play goes down. So that's huge to me. And when a guy needs to develop, he's not going to develop to the maximum ability if he doesn't have all those intangibles. I mean, this league is a son of a you-know-what. And to make it, you got to have some you-know-what in your neck. You got to have some grit, or you're not going to make it. I mean, I've been in this a long time as a player, a horrible player, but as a coach, okay? And there was guys that you see come and go that are so talented and they're off the charts measurables, and you're like, man, how come that guy didn't make it? He was, you know, he was in the league for 2 or 3 years. It's because he don't have the other stuff. That to me, I'm just talking offensive line play. It's critical. It's critical. If you don't have that, you got no chance. I don't care how big you are, how pretty you look, how fast you run. You know, none of that matters if you don't have a little shit in your neck. And I'll go ahead and say it. That's just the reality of it.
How do you gauge that? Does it show up on film? Is it through Zoom?
It shows on film. It shows when you talk with them and you ask some questions. There's some assessment, personality assessment exams that a lot of teams utilize, the league utilizes, that we have access to, that kind of exposes that and leads you to, hey, I need to dig into this area a little bit more. You talk to their position coaches or other coaches on staff at their colleges. I mean, that's how you find out. I mean, and then, I mean, you don't know really to the very end until you actually get him here, right? But you do your best assessment on all those areas to find out what's this guy made of, what's, you know, what's can he overcome adversity and all that kind of stuff.
Is the telltale sign finishing plays?
That's a huge part of it, right? Does he love ball, right? Is he a strainer, right? Or is he just kind of throttle down and relax, right, at the end of the play? You know as good as anyone lap what that's all about. So, yeah, absolutely.
This guy
finishes. He finishes. He's physical. Put on that Montana State game. You'll see him finishing guys. So he's what you're looking for in a young player like that.
Just to circle back real quick, what does it mean to have a little, you know, wet in your neck?
What do you mean by that? I mean, I think it's self-explanatory, you know? I mean, have you seen the D linemen we have to go against every day? Right? I mean, you got to have a little something in your neck to give them a little shove at the end of the block, not let them give you the shove, you know? Maybe I just reflect on my own experience because I wasn't a very good player, how hard it was to play in this league. And it's just, it's hard. And you're going to have to overcome some adversity and work through some ups and downs. And a lot of these kids have never faced that. So how are you going to handle it when it hits you right in the mouth, right? Nobody cares where you came from and what your college career was, or I was a whatever they call it, five-star recruit, whatever the hell. No one gives a shit. It doesn't matter. You're playing against grown-ass men. You're trying to take their job. These guys are married with kids. They don't care if you're some hotshot 22-year-old. You know what I mean? And to me, as a coach, I feel like it's my obligation to kind of promote that, you know, because the men in the room that I coach now have earned the right. So the new kid coming in, he's got to earn the right to be in the room and compete with those guys. So I've seen a lot of guys can't handle the business side. This is the best business in the world, and it's the ugliest, nastiest, coldest business in the world. It is what it is. Get over it. Here's a tissue. Go cry in the corner, and let's go. You know what I mean? If you can't handle that, you're not going to last. And I remember back in my years, I mean, Lap, you probably had guys come through the locker room back in your day that they couldn't handle that. And they were talented guys, but they just couldn't handle the business. I mean, North Dallas 40 had a great scene in there about when you call it, I call it a game, you call it a business. I mean, I call it a business, you call it a game, you know? And I like sharing that scene with my guys because it's both. And you got to understand it and deal with it and move on. So it is what it is.
All right, you guys have listened to that once. I think you should go back and listen again because that whole conversation about attitude and what it takes to be a player in this league, he's looking at us. He's talking to us, but you can almost see and hear him addressing Jackson Carmen as opposed to us. It was almost, it was as much talking about Volson as it was Jackson Carmen. Whether that was his intent or not, maybe it was, but it felt very pointed. Yes, he was answering the questions and he was explaining what we were asking him, but it felt like he was sending a message. And I don't know. I don't know if you don't have that in you, can you get it? Is it innate? Can Jackson Carmen flip that switch? Because if he can, you said it. He's got the skills. He's got the physical traits more so than Volson. But if he can't, Volson's going to win that job. He's already got that. That's not going away. And it's going to be really interesting to see in training camp if Jackson Carmen doesn't come in here with some shit in his neck.
I just can't. This is going to be a thing.
I love the way he tried not to say it. And then he's like, well, I'm just going to say it.
I'm just going to say it. You know what? I mean, it's just – we're not – I'm just not sure how the shit got there. Like, how did it get in? It's in there. Like, are you playing mad because it's in there and you're just kind of in a bad mood because of that and it tastes bad? Like, what – it's a very hard analogy to try to follow all the way to – I hope it's not based in any kind of reality. I'm not quite sure.
I think philosophically it's – it got there because of that guy standing in front of you and you better go kick his ass because of it. That's what it all comes down to.
That guy right there put shit in my neck. Now I've got to take him out. So Frank Pollock is just a joy. He's just a joy. He's fantastic to talk to. It was so great that we got to get him at least once this weekend to give us that. And if you don't like listening to all these clips, here's a tissue. Go cry in the corner, okay? let's go to Lou Anarumo came down, and we were talking about Tyson Anderson. And he talked about a clip of basically his favorite play of the year. And that he shows to everybody that comes through. I thought it was fascinating. I thought it was interesting. And it made me want to go back and watch that play and rethink about the entire Tennessee game. Here is Lou Anarumo talking about his favorite play.
You know, again, all these guys that come out, they're always going to have a little bit of a learning curve when it comes to all of it, especially tackling. You know, every time they come in my room on these 30 visits, what I do is I sit down and I show them one of the biggest plays of the year in my book was it's first and 10. Tennessee gets the ball back with about 2 minutes and 30 seconds left in the divisional game. They've got two timeouts where the game's tied. So to me, the playbook is open for them. Okay, it's not necessarily 2 minutes. They run the ball on the perimeter with Derrick Henry, and it's Cheeto and Derrick Henry, one-on-one. And we've all seen what that looks like for most corners in this league. You know, he's made highlights of it. Well, Cheeto knocks the stiff arm down, and it's second and 7. And that leads to what ended up being the interception. If he doesn't make that tackle, it's probably a 20-yard run before Jesse can ever get over there because everybody was kind of pinned. I show those guys that immediately, okay, so this is the NFL. You're going to be in one-on-one with guys like this, and you have to get them on the ground. It's like a base hit in baseball. I don't care if it's a dribbler through the right side because they shifted to the left. It goes down as a hit. Get them on the ground. And these guys will have to learn that it's not going to be a knockout hit. You want to be a singles hitter as a tackler, not a home run hitter.
Did he bring him in?
No, I wasn't able to get him on that, but he will when he gets here. He will see it. That's one of my favorite 5 minutes of my time with the guys.
I like that not just because it's a great story and insight on his view of the season, but I do think it goes a long way to what they look for in their corners. Mm-hmm. Like they do not, you know, we hear a lot, and PFF talks a lot about this, about it, tackling with corners is whatever. It's about cover. You need to be able to cover. That's all that matters. They really have just not viewed it. They really care so much about tackling in space and those guys. Even Trey Waynes, who was whatever. I mean, that was part of his DNA when they signed him to that kind of was he's a guy that's going to get in there and not afraid to tackle, going to be aggressive, going to come up, you know, and you just see so much of teams putting DBs in challenging positions in space to have to make tackles against yak athletes and running backs and things like that, he just really values that. And I thought that story and the fact that that's his favorite thing, favorite 5 minutes to spend with people that come through here, I think is very telling about his view of defensive back play.
Yeah. If you remember also in that game, it was a play Deontay Foreman broke one for 40-some yards. Mm-hmm. And was it Hilton that chased him down and tackled? And then the very next play, Hilton bats the ball up and intercepts it. Again, a cornerback making a tackle in a key spot that, I mean, essentially wins you the game.
Yeah. Last up.
You guys live? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. It's all good.
We're recording.
It's all good. Congratulations.
Yeah, congrats.
I'm sure it was a great draft.
Yeah, and the players locked because they're flying too.
Take it easy.
Scouts have a good week. You know, it's a good time to be a scout and look at this class they worked for. Best beer of the year coming right there.
Oh, yeah. You got his first round pick.
There's no doubt. Andrew Johnson walking by here as he goes to his car. Last one, Tyson Anderson on the conference call with us. We talked a little bit earlier about, you know, him being a captain and leadership. I was kind of asked him about Dane Brugler had him listed as a two-time captain. Dane's not going to like this. Now, I don't know if this is true. He claims that's different. And I thought it was another good insight piece of information into the type of guy that Tyson Anderson. Here's Anderson on conference call with us.
Do you view your speed as your biggest strength, or do you see your biggest strength as something else?
I think my biggest strength, honestly, is my intelligence, my football IQ. That's my biggest strength. My smarts and ability to adapt on the fly and just learn fast.
Tyson, saw you're a two-time captain. How do they elect those? Is that like your players, teammates elect that, or do coaches name those?
So, I'm a three-time captain actually. So, it's a player elected thing every time. So every year we go around vote who the captains are on the team.
What did that mean to you? Three-time captain. I mean, that's pretty rare.
It means a lot. A lot of my UT bros is out here right now. So, I mean, it just means a lot to me. I mean, these are dudes we've been grinding with. I've been grinding with these dudes the last 4 or 5 years, man. Just to see this love and support that they're showing today. But, I mean, I just take it serious, to be honest. I know I'm a leader. I know my voice needs to be heard. And I know when I stand up and say something, it's going to be the right thing. And I'm just excited, to be honest.
There's Tyson Anderson, three-time captain at Toledo. And, you know, I'm a leader and people need to hear my voice. And, you know, that's just the type of stuff that the Bengals just love. It's like listening to a choir sing to them. They can't get enough of it. So there it is. There's kind of some of the best of 72 hours down here at PBS and a new class of Bengals, six players that they hope are going to make a very big difference. And honestly, they hope will be the foundation of the future of this defense, essentially. And we'll see how it all plays out. As a whole, it was a little different than I thought it would be in that how heavy it ended up going on defense. At the end of the day, we knew it would be heavy on defense, but, at the end of the day, it also it checked most of their most important boxes off, and you know you got to feel good about the state of this team right now, depth wise. They're as certainly as deep as they've ever been since Zach Taylor has been here, personality wise, culture wise, athlete wise. I thought it was a successful weekend for a number of different reasons.
It is not out of the question that this draft class, maybe there won't be a single game started by this group, and it could still go down as a great draft class. I mean, the Bengals are returning 10 of 11 starters on defense, and B.J. Hill is sliding in to replace Larry Ogunjobi. There's no starting jobs available. Yeah, there's probably going to be some injuries along the line. These guys are going to fill in, but there's no guarantee for that. All these guys are going to play. It feels, even though it's not a Jamar Chase, Joe Burrow, plug and play rookie kind of thing, that this is going to be a really, really good draft class. And of course, draft classes are graded beyond that rookie year too. Like you said, these guys are going to be the core of this defense for years to come. But I know we did a couple pods ago that they run pass or boot on number of games started by this draft class, and you went low, I went middle, and I'm feeling better about your pick now.
Yeah, well, especially when you have less players to choose from. All right. Thanks to everybody. I hope you guys have enjoyed the content. There's plenty more up on the site from today. Analysis and stories coming your way. Depth charts will be up Monday, and the team starts showing up again. We'll have an availability actually here on Tuesday, and we're into the off-season program for the next 6 weeks, where once a week basically we'll be in here talking to some players, coaches, open locker rooms. Got to stand in the locker room again for the first time before the pandemic. It's very nice to be back in there. And we went right back to our do nothing, do gags and tell jokes story circle right in the middle of the line, just like old days while we waited for Daxton Hill to get done with his interview. So it was a very fun week down here. I enjoy the draft every year. I've enjoyed the run-up. I hope you guys have too. And now next stop is talking about real football. It's excited to do that again. Thanks to everybody for following along and participating in live rooms. Remember, live room on Monday. And we'll have that. Keep an eye out for when that will be. We're thinking it's going to be in the lunch hour on Monday. And then Tuesday night at 7 p.m.,
at 50 West Brewing Company. Myself, Jay, and Bengals Director of College Scouting, Mike Potts, will be down there talking about this draft haul that the Bengals put together this year. So listen, you can come on down, have some drinks, ask us some questions afterwards, and all the insight on the Bengals draft class with Mike, who's awesome. Love talking to Potsy after the draft to get the kind of the real inside view on how everything went, dating really all the way back to the middle of last college football season. So should be a really, really fun event. Looking forward to that. So hopefully we'll see you down there. Until then, it's time for the best beer of the year, Jay.
Maybe two or three.
Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.